Baruch Hashem, new season. Okay, new edition. I look forward to this every year, twice a year. It's chaval only twice a year. They should do this every month. It would be really good if they could have manpower for this. The new edition, the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society, the RJJ Journal. A new edition has come out, full 2017, Sukkot. Sukkot. 577. I'm surprised they write Sukkot, not Sukkos. Okay, but 5778. There are some great articles here. What I want to discuss with you right now is the article of Tzvilas Kalim of electrical devices. Something which always was very mysterious, at least to me. I always wondered about this, what to do, what people do, what the halachas are. I never had any clarity in this issue at all. So, but by David Cohn, now there are a lot of David Cohns, the one who is the administrative rabbinic coordinator of CRC Chicago. You know who he is?
I don't know. You know what the CRC is?
That's Satmar, right?
No. Chicago
Rabbinical Council.
Yeah. Chicago.
That's a CRC with a triangle.
Okay, Chicago Rabbinical Council. Okay, I don't.
They're big machshir in Chicago.
Yeah.
Hechsher in Chicago. Okay, so
and Avi. That
comes from the CRC. Okay. So this is Rav David Cohn, the administrative rabbinic coordinator at the Chicago Rabbinic. What's his last C stand for?
Council.
He has a fantastic, fantastic article here. I encourage you all to read it yourself. Just to review in a few minutes we have over here, just go to the basic Yesodos, about Tvilat Kelim of electrical devices. I'm just curious, what do all of you do? You buy an urn. Now, by the way, not going to the laws of Tvilat Kelim, the basic Yesodos, anything that comes in direct contact with the food requires Tvilat Kelim, pretty much.
If it's metal or glass,
Lafuke plastic or wood,
China,
anything which is metal, basically metal or glass that was once upon a time owned by a non-Jew, and it comes in direct contact with the food, it requires tefillah. You have to immerse it in a kosher mikvah and make a bracha. Sher kedushan b'mitzvos v'sivanu al tzvilas kli or tzvilas kelim, depending on your custom, if you say b'loshen Rabbah or not. Okay, so let's discuss classic shaylan urn, an electrical urn. Today they make these, they put these pumps, right? Today some like some still use the traditional urns, and some now they make these nice ones when you push for the water to come out. Why do they do that? I don't know why, but that's very popular.
No, because
the
canoe won't be able to touch it.
Oh, that's the reason why. The children should be getting burnt. You say brilliant. You have a regular urn. Oh, you see? It was Kedai to come to learn just to understand that. Unbelievable. Okay. Okay, that's fantastic. So that's Taka the reason. It prevents tragedies. It makes a lot of sense. Okay, you have children running around, they'll easily open up the spout, get burnt. So you have to go push from on top. It's not so hot. They're not so hot. They usually what?
The old ones were.
The new ones, they're insulated. So you have to push from the top. It's a protection. Children should not get hurt. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Thank you for enlightening me. So what do you do, Rabbi Isai? What do you do? Who wants to confess?
What I always did was I literally over the place where you plug in, I always put a piece of tape over that spot. I never had any.
And you toggle it?
And I toggle it, and I never had a bad experience.
You don't use it right away, you have to leave it.
And then, what do you do?
But I know you only have to do the inside. Though.
Even if you toggle the electronics, if you don't use it until it's really dried out, there's no problem.
Ooh, he's saying chidushim. He's saying that you can toggle an electronic device and let it dry.
If you take your iPhone.
He talks about it.
And you put your iPhone.
You write an article?
If you take your iPhone and you put it in the water by accident, and then you put it in rice and you leave it there for a couple of days.
The
problem is not that it won't work. The problem is that eventually it'll corrode.
Oh, okay.
That's the problem. The problem.
No. Okay.
The solution is very easy.
Yeah.
Your mafker.
No one gives that solution.
Why not? Your mafker. What's the problem?
It's not hefker. It's not a sincere.
Why not? There's no bailum on it.
So what?
People use that for the knives. Okay.
Why was it owned by a Jew? Was it owned by a Jew previously?
If it was owned by a Jew,
that heter had heter a mayor is only a short term heter. It's not a long term heter. A mayor, that heter is when you have, let's say, you have a knife or you have a utensil and you forgot to be told before Yom Tif. So the Poskim say so you mafker it, but after Yom Tif you have an obligation to immediately be tovel it right away. So that's a heter, but it's not a long term heter. Let's talk now.
Do it every week.
That's obviously not a solution.
Everything in my house is happening.
Okay, so what do people do? So, over the years, listen, I really haven't paid that much attention, but over the years I've heard two things. You don't do anything. You can't. What am I supposed to do? I go pay $100 for an expensive electrical device, a toaster. What do you do for a toaster?
I went into the bar, I bought hand mixers.
Yeah.
So he said, what, did you just stick in the bottom with a blade in?
Yeah.
He said, no, stick the whole thing in. I said, what do you mean stick the whole thing in? He said, don't worry about it. Leave it for 2 weeks. Don't use it for 2 weeks. It'll be fine.
Right. It dries out.
Okay, so you're saying the other approach.
Okay, so it's already been tugged.
Okay, let's just. Oh, wait, that's not the solution. I want to get to this. There's a lot of information here in this article. Okay, here's that. Right side. So, what are the solutions? So, over the years, I've heard two things. I really am not. I knew nothing about this. Over the years, I've heard, dude, want either do nothing. What are you supposed to do? And there's nothing I can possibly do. So, it's mutter. What a solution in life, right? When there's no solution, it's mutter. But that's what it seems many people do. If there is no solution to being toivel in an electrical device, so you can do nothing about it. The other solution is you toivel it and you let it dry and you hope for the best. You say a prayer. You hope for the best. Okay, so let's talk about.
I heard of a third solution in the wintertime.
Yeah.
You take it and there's a big snow and you bury it in the snow and take it out.
Interesting. Ooh, very good. Very, very good.
How long do you leave it in the snow?
A second.
You toivel it in snow. So snow is not going to cause any problems. That's fantastic. He doesn't mention that. He doesn't mention now, he should write him a note. That would be really interesting to talk about. Fantastic. Okay, so what are the issues? So let's talk about first of all the technical issues. He has a fantastic analysis of what are the issues of why it may not necessarily be a good idea to be toivel it and hope for the best. Issue number one is corrosion. Our mayor mentioned this. What's the issue? Let's assume for argument's sake that all of the electronic components will thoroughly dry. And they won't get ruined. Okay, that we'll discuss in a moment, which is very unlikely. But almost in any sophisticated electrical device, there's going to be insulation, or there's going to be some type of basically insulation or some type of component which is sensitive to water. And although it will dry thoroughly, and there will be absolutely no moisture, but it has been affected by the water, and when it dries, it's brittle, or it's been affected, and therefore, although when you plug it in, it will work well for a period of time, you have already put into motion a process, a natural process, that it will die prematurely. It will malfunction prematurely. It will that's called corrosion. If you have some type of wire which has insulation around the wire, the reason why there's insulation is because there's a purpose to the insulation. They didn't put the insulation there just for fun. They put it there because for 70, 80 years, they know that if you don't put insulation around the wire is going to burn out. It's going to get ruined. So they need to have insulation around the wire. Or make a fire by putting this object in water. You're causing the insulation to become brittle and to basically corrode prematurely, and that will automatically cause your appliance to malfunction or get ruined prematurely. Is that a consideration that a person has to take into consideration when dealing with an electrical device? So you'd be shocked to know, he quotes him in many places and says, too bad for you. If you know 100% for sure that the electrical device will not be ruined a kihuzeh, and there is absolutely no safety issue if you can be true, I don't think anyone can say that nowadays anymore. Maybe 20 years ago they can tell you that. But today we live in a spooky world. No one's going to take responsibility for that. That's 100% safe. But if you can be, some people will tell you, no, certain devices, it's a fact. There's no safety issue. And you're right, it will corrode. And instead of this thing lasting you for 10 years, it's only going to last you for 5 years. Or maybe for 6 years, whatever it is. So they, believe it or not, he says, there are many places that say, too bad. That's the cost of being Jewish. A mitzvah is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to be mekayim a mitzvah.
What about the
if it's bikuach nefesh, I was my whole akdama. Forget it. We're not discussing that. If you can say for sure there is no bikuach nefesh issue, there's no issue that this thing will explode and cause harm. The only issue is, when will it stop working? If I do not, I'm not toivel it, it will stop working in 10 years. If I'm toivel it, statistics have shown you begin the process of corrosion, and after 5 years, this device will stop working. Are you mechuyev to be toivel this object? So he presents here some poskim that say you mechuyev. Believe it or not, you're mechuyev because tzvilas kelim is not a simple matter. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa. It's a serious matter. Nothing like should be, you can't play around with it. And if you can be toivel your item and you're worried what's going to be in 5 years versus 10 years or even less amount of time, so it's a mitzvah. Look at it as buying a nice esrog. You buy a nice esrog, you pay a few more dollars, so you'll have to get a new toaster in 5 years instead of getting a new toaster in 10 years. Okay, that's a chiddush. That's a very big chiddush. Now, there's another issue, and the issue is, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. If you put it in the mikvah and you take it out of the mikvah, you may be surprised that, you know, it just doesn't work anymore. Now you're going to tell me, what do you mean it doesn't work? People have done this. They put it in the mikvah and let it dry for 2 weeks and it works. So it all depends on the electrical device. Today, every single day, every electrical device is getting more and more complex. There are parts, components, LCD displays where it's been proven they never ever dry. The moisture never leaves them, and if there's moisture, water causes it to short circuit. Now, by the way, point of interesting is that pure water, H2O, does not conduct electricity. If you have a mikvah, that's absolutely, it's a very good business to go into. A mikvah of pure H2O. No minerals.
Yeah, but no health authority would allow it.
Who needs health authority?
Rainwater is pure.
It is pure rainwater. No, it's not. So you need some type of machine. I have no doubt about this. A laboratory. You send in your toaster to a laboratory. You send your toaster to a laboratory where they use H2O, the purest water.
Yeah, but that's not my entire. Yeah, you can't make a mikveh from it.
Why not? Oh, you see the bar. Why? If you have the bar, you can filter it. You have a kosher mikveh and you put in a filter into the kosher, you could clean out the minerals.
You have to have a microfilter.
Who knows? All right. So the problem is water, tap water has minerals, and the minerals conduct electricity. Do they conduct electricity? Rachmanis, when a person can be electrocuted, they conduct electricity so good. First of all, there are electrical components today, and every gadget today is getting more and more complex as we speak. And therefore, there are components that will never dry out. And therefore, when you plug it in, it's going to short circuit. Number two, there are components in many electrical devices which are made to retain a charge. And when you pull it out, if you plug it into the wall for the first time and then you pull it out, there is still like a battery. There are still things which retain within them electricity. There are components of every electrical device. What are they called?
Capacitors,
even a teeny amount, and when you put them in the mikvah, you're causing that electricity in these capacitors, which have this charge, these mini batteries, which you don't even realize are there, to now spread to other components that are within, connect to the water, and to parts of the system which are not able to handle that charge, and it can be a teeny, teeny amount of charge, and will cause very critical elements of your electrical device to short circuit, and out it goes into the garbage. So today, more and more, it's a very, very great risk to put a utensil, electrical device, into the mikvah. Okay, you go into a Hasidic store, go to the Buzz in Coney Island, so they know, they have this down to a science. They'll tell you what you can put, what you can't put, what it's a risk, what's not a risk. Okay, the people who deal with this on a daily basis, they seem to be more knowledgeable in which electrical devices are very simple. There are some things that are super simple. Okay, you want to go, you have a sudden, you plug into a warmer, a cup of coffee. You ever have those devices? I used to have that in Yeshiva. You put into a cup of water, right? And you plug it in.
A coil, right?
Yeah. Okay, you put that into the mikvah, nothing's going to happen, okay? Not like, who knows? I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I don't think the ones that you buy for $5, you put into the mikvah, nothing's going to happen. If you let it dry out for 2 days, if it's going to make a difference, you put into the mikvah. Not likely. Maybe you'll tell me. I don't know. I can't imagine. Then there are urns that are very low end, they're very simple, there's no kunsim to the urns, nothing high tech. They'll tell you it's safe. Okay, fine, it's safe. Now let's say it's not so simple, it's not so clear. So what is one to do? So some want to come on to the following leniency. There's a very tremendous chiddush which all the poskim reject, but I've heard this in the past, it rings in my head, and that's why I'm telling it to you, is that the laws of based upon the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says, anything, the laws of Tfilas Kelim are all rooted in the laws of Tumah V'Tahara. A utensil that is owned by a non-Jew is inherently Tomei. When it comes into the possession of a Jew, you're putting it in a mikvah in order to cleanse it, like a nida, or like a person who's Tomei. That's a chiddush, that the utensil is Tomei, like a Tumas Mace. And you put in the mikvah, it becomes so. Now, there's no tumah. We're not doing tumas meis here. But there's another category of tumah, of it being owned by a non-Jew. When you put it in the mikvah, you've now cleansed it from this spiritual contamination. That's what it says in the Yerushalmi. If this is lahalacha, that means the laws of utensils follow the laws of tumah v'tahara. Anything mechubar lekarka, that is permanently attached to the ground, is not subject to contamination. Not subject to any contamination. Not tumas meis, not tumas maga, tumas nevela. If it's attached to the ground, it's a halacha, there's no tumah. An appliance that only works when you plug it into the wall is called mechubar lekarka. Okay, it's not wireless. It's mechubar lekarka. You take an urn, you take an appliance, a toaster, you take an object, you plug into the wall. If it's not plugged into the wall, it's not going to work. If it's plugged into the wall, it's mechubar lekarka. Then you got a problem. You're right. This battery operated, it's not mechubar lekarka. You're right, you got a big problem.
What about a rechargeable battery?
You got a problem. It's not mechubar lekarka. It's not mechubar lekarka.
When it's charging, it's mechubar.
When it's charging, it's mechubar. When you're using it, it's not mechubar. I believe it's a problem. You have to clarify it. It's a problem. But if it's only used when it's plugged into the wall, then it's mechubar lekarka, so then this object is not mekabel tumah to begin with. It does not need to go to mikvah, period. Ki hu zeh. This is a leniency that has been used over the years for people who do not want to be toivel electrical devices which are at risk of becoming ruined.
What do you do when you have a commercial fridge?
A fridge is not required to be
a commercial mixer that's... You know,
so it's a problem. It's a very big problem. If it's mechubar lekarka, is it mechubar lekarka? Not necessarily. Is it more than 40 saw? It's metal. If it's a certain size, then it's called mechubar lekarka. If it's less than a certain size, it's not mechubar lekarka. But electrical, let's just focus on the idea of an electrical that needs the current from the wall. It only is operational when it's mechubar lekarka. Therefore, this is a form of leniency. Right, so you, over here, he pretty much thoroughly rejects that.
Okay? He rejects it.
He rejects it. I've heard this over the years, and he attacks that leniency. He says it's not acceptable because it's not called the karka. The utensil is functional. It's not functional to use hot. It's a receptacle. You have an urn. You can fill it with cold water. Okay, that's not what you made it. That's not what you have it for. But it's still in halacha called a receptacle. It's a receptacle. It holds water. It comes in contact with the water, so you want it hot, boiling hot water, and you need to plug into the wall. So that means automatically it's mechubar lekarka. Listen, Avi, if this het has been used over the years, I'm sure you can find poskim that say it's acceptable. But he over here, the one who wrote this article by David Cohen, he is very, very unhappy with such leniency, and he pretty much completely dismisses it. I encourage you to read this. Then he comes on to a fascinating heter. This is an incredible chiddush. This is absolutely unbelievable what he says.
He accepts the
next I'm about to say, he accepts. He says, Rebbe Chiddush, and it's based on Igus Moshe. I don't remember all the details, but it goes something along lines as follows. There is a halacha. If you have a utensil that's owned b'shutfis between a Jew and a non-Jew, you have some type of oven, doesn't touch the food, mamish, whatever, a bowl, a utensil that would ordinarily require tzvilas kelim, but a non-Jew has a legal ownership, partnership in the ownership of this object. It says in Shulchan Aruch, it's potter from tzvila. You do not need to put in the mikvah. Why? So there's a very big question. Why is that so? What's the lumdis? So the lumdis is, this is the chiddush. Lumdis is because it's impossible to do tzvila. Why is it impossible to do tefila? You accomplish nothing. Since a non-Jew has a ownership, a partial ownership in this utensil, and the non-Jew's ownership is what gives the object contamination, if I'm toiveling in the mikvah, it's like toivel, the asheretz biyadai. What are you accomplishing? So therefore, Chazal say, Shulchan Aruch, you don't have to be toivel it.
It doesn't matter how much the guy owns, 1%?
Even 1%. Doesn't matter. Even 1%. What?
If you're leasing from a guy.
Certainly, then the guy owns it. You don't need it.
You're getting the pleasure out
of it. Right. Now let's explain the lumnus. Now here is the crux of the issue. Here's where he goes into the lumnus. This is what he explains. Okay, running out of time. There are tzvei dinim in tzvilas kelim. There are two dinim. There's a mitzvah d'oraisa to be toivel the utensil in the water. It has nothing to do with preparing food. If this happens to be a utensil which food comes in direct contact, there's a mitzvah d'oraisa to be toivel. Let's discuss another. Let's say you own the utensil. You forgot. I forgot to be toivel the utensil. And I use it. And I prepare a dish, $1,000 dish. Oy, I forgot to be toivel the utensil. Am I allowed to eat the food? Of course you are. L'chatchilo, you're not allowed to prepare food in a utensil until you toivel the utensil. But if you're not toivel the utensil, it does not take away, does not make the food non-kosher. Chazal said you're not allowed to prepare food until you toivel the utensil. Min ha-toirah, according to Min ha-toirah, you're allowed to. Min ha-toirah, have a utensil, you have 30 days to be toivolit. Or even longer. There's a mitzvah once in your life to be toivolit. But if you're not toivolit, so you want to prepare food. There's no harm done to, there's no contamination that goes from the utensil to the food. You're allowed to prepare food in a utensil that you were not toivolit in the mikvah. But you have to be toivolit. But l'chatchilo, the rabbanon, they stepped in and they told you, don't you dare prepare food in this utensil until you toivel in the mikvah. But the Rabbanon said, in a situation where it's impossible for you to be toivel the utensil, for example, where the utensil is jointly owned by a Jew and a non-Jew, so there the tefillah is not going to accomplish anything, we fall back now on the letter of the law. The letter of the law says, Hay luchot v'hay luchot. There's a mitzvah of tefillah, and that's it. But as far as using a utensil which has not been immersed in the mikvah, that does not have any effect whatsoever on the food. It's only a rabbinic enactment that you're not allowed to use a utensil until you first toivel in the mikvah. But where that it cannot be done, so then in a chanami, you're using a utensil which has some spiritual contamination of a non-Jew, whatever that means, we're not sensitive to these things, and you're allowed to use it l'chatchila to prepare for yourself food. So the person wants to say that a utensil that is an electrical utensil which cannot be immersed in the mikvah because there's a challenge, it may indeed become ruined, corrosion or whatever, or be short circuit. So it's no different than a utensil that is owned partially by a non-Jew. You're exempt from being toivelit, and there is no prohibition to use it before you put it in the mikvah. So it all is rooted in this concept, in this idea, in this concept of shutfis between a Jew and a non-Jew. Now, today, If you go look carefully, you go to the bars, or you go see the advertise every so often, they sell the, especially the urns, only the urns, I think. They want to make, they make that, that it, they, it's owned by a Jew. The entire process of the making of the urn does not require tzvila, because this urn was manufactured by Jews. Now, there's no urn today that's made by Jews. Sorry to tell you that. It doesn't exist. Every urn today, no matter how many Hasidic letters it has on it, is made in China. And in China, the workers are not Jewish. So how then do they do this? So this is very complicated. So the better companies, they actually go there, they go to China, and they make a kinyan. They make a kinyan kesef. They give money in order to acquire the raw materials. And they use a forklift to actually do hagbah to acquire the raw materials. And then the factory takes in the raw materials and makes these are hired workers. They make it into a lot, into a run for the Jews. And so the better ones have a mashkiach timidi on premises.
Why do you have to go through that whole thing? You can have, let's say, Buzz. You have a guy who's 2% owner in Buzz.
It's not Kinyan Kesef. That's not in halacha. It's not all of these things may not be technically and halachically valid to be a koine. It may still be considered being owned by a guy, made by a guy. If you want to cross the T's and dot the I's, you got to do it the right way. You got to go to China and you got to make a Kinyan Kesef and you got to do a Kinyan Hagbah. You own, you manage, do everything the right way. There are other companies that do it electronically, and they rely upon Din de Malchus Adina, other technicalities, other ways to do it. These are all leniencies. But the ideal thing to do is to go there, to make a Kinyan Kesef, do Kinyan Hagbah. They do this. They do Kinyan Kesef, and they do Hagbah on a forklift, and they have Mashkech Tini to watch that this run on these machines are done, that what they're making is our material, and we take possession immediately, and we ship it right away to the United States or to Israel. So it's owned mitchilosoi v'atsoifoi by Jews. Not so simple. Sugi in the Gemara. Umin koine b'shvach kli. If you give an uman raw material, and you tell them, I want you to make for me from this raw material into a utensil, according to one opinion in the Gemara, you can scream all you want. You can make all the kinyanim you want, kinyan hagbah, kinyan kesef. The fact that the uman, the craftsman, improves the raw material into an object of use, the uman automatically becomes the owner.
No, Kanani.
So therefore, many challenge that even though you go to China, Mashkiach Tamidi, it says on the box, it was made by Jews, Mashkiach Tamidi, and by Meir Mashkiach Tamidi, who cares? The Goyim, the workers, are not Yisrael. They are non-Jews. Umen koine b'shvach kli. And then someone says, even if you want to be Mekel, you make him with the way to make, you sell chametz to a guy. The same way you sell chametz to a guy, you make a kinyan from a guy to acquire the raw material. And then someone says, even if you want to hold that woman is loikane b'shvach kli, but a factory, that for sure is kine. So all these are very big problems. They don't necessarily work. And then when you want to be making all of these leniencies, so what happens? What happens most of the time? They send it to America. Who picks the distributors? And who do they send it to? Bed and Bath. They send Amazon. There's always a guy somewhere in the middle that becomes the distributor. Somewhere in the middle. So therefore you go into the store and it says on the label in Hebrew letters with the Hechsher, the Badat, it was made by Jews. Yeah, very nice, but you know, where am I buying this? I'm buying this in Bed and Bath. How did it get on Amazon? Who's the seller? Some non-Jew distributor picked it up along the way. Once it becomes the property of a non-Jew, it automatically requires tefillah.
But that's the solution. But let's say that final distributor sells it to
him. No, doesn't matter. But doesn't matter. So if there's a non-Jew somewhere along the line.
So what's the Eitzah?
There is no Eitzah. That's the bottom line. There is no Eitzah. So you're taking away. So some of these things are lightened. They lighten the problem to some degree, but it's not a perfect solution. You'll see it's very common. The urns have become a very big thing now. People, for whatever reason, everyone has an urn, all these families, they wanted to have tefillah. and they don't want to be tevilit, and they have on the label that it's naki, that it does not require tzvila. It's true. They do the best that they can. They do the best they can by Sunday. He writes over here. They go to China. Anyway, going to China to make the hachanas. So once they're ready, they do a kinyan, do hakbah, and we pass in the ikur that umin is loikon the b'shvachli. So really, and therefore, as long as you're careful that there's not going to be any non-Jew in the middle from the time that it's made to you, the purchaser, to the consumer, it's not gone through a non-Jewish company who's selling it to you. You buy it from some Hamish Hasidish fellow on the street who did not get it from a distributor from somewhere, then in a chnami you have taken away the issue.
They also bought a different
I'm very happy. I'm going to tell you another issue. The last part of this chapter, this is very fascinating. Very, very fascinating. Today has become a craze. People, they buy the Keurig. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Keurig.
The Keurig?
Keurig.
The Keurig coffee maker. Keurig has been around for a very, very long time.
And
Keurig. Keurig coffee maker. You have it. And you buy a K cup, right? So do you tevel it? No. No way. You're not tevel it. And you buy no one's tevel it. Now you'll for sure ruin it. Everyone agrees. You put the Keurig thing into it. You'll kill it. You're dead. It's gone. Don't do it. So what do you do? It's not so simple. What do you do? What do you do with the Keurig? This is a very big craze, a very big sensation, and you can go buy a billion flavors of the K-Cups, all different you want, whatever you want, every brand under the sun. People like it, okay? It became a big thing today. What do you do with these machines? So there is no solution. No one's, basically, everyone is very, I have not heard anyone making a Hamish Keurig machine, okay? But there's no Hamish version of the Keurig machines that someone's doing hakbah with Mashkech Tmidi. Not yet. So he writes here something very, very fascinating, that someone, a younger man in Lakewood, found the solution. And he has a gounce of pilpul on the solution if it really, really works. And this is the solution you hear about, is that you break it. Don't try this at home. You actually have to damage it to the point where it's no longer functional, that you now need an umma, a master craftsman, to repair it. And if a Jew who is a craftsman, an umman, repairs it, so then halacha, this is acceptable, it automatically now becomes a new utensil. When do people do this? There are those who are very machmer. I'm not from those people, don't look at me. Who they want to be toivel aluminum pans. It's a real stretch to do that. Some people want to be toivel aluminum pans. You know, they're disposable. Yeah. The disposable aluminum pans.
You can buy those that are toivel
aluminum. Oh, yeah? But that's not so simple, because you have to coin there. You know, the one, when you give a gift, you, the one who owns
anyway,
it, they do it anyway.
Yeah,
it's okay, it's a cooler.
You can see it has a
label on it. Okay, so very good. So some people, they want to be tevel. So what do you do if you're machmir? If you're machmir, you'll only use the aluminum pan that was teveled in the mikvah. And here you are, Erev Shabbos, I want to bake a cake, and I will not tevel the aluminum pan. This is a very easy solution. If you're not using it for liquids, you're using it for some type of like a cake dough where it doesn't have to be, where it doesn't, you can have a hole. It doesn't have to be perfectly perfect. It can have a hole. So what you do is, you take a knife and you slit the four corners. You slit the four corners.
One hole is enough. Why do you have to?
No, not one hole. You have to slit the four corners. That's what they say. And you lay it out as a flat pan. And then you reconstitute it and you squeeze it together at the corners. You squeeze it together. Maybe take a stapler. You take a stapler and you put the corners back together. Obviously, there are holes. So if you're making a challah, or you have a cake, or you have a batter, that kugel, and it doesn't matter if it's porous, you then it has been fashioned by a Jew. Okay, so that is a solution.
All these takeout places do all this? They go through this?
No, they don't do this. They're not makbid on this.
So I can't eat there.
99% of the population is not makbid on being toiled aluminum pans. You're not makbid. Now, so the same principle applies to the Keurig coffee machines. Now, this only works when you need a maisa uman. So what do they do? There's a component. You have to go through all the details that is soldered. That is, soldered. That is soldered on the bottom. You go to a person and you basically you unsolder it. You basically you snap and you cut it. Now, an average person does not know how to solder wires.
He doesn't have a soldering.
You don't have the machine, you don't know how to. You can give him all the machines and tell him, do it. Look you like you're from Mars. I don't know. The average person in the street does not know how to do this. So therefore, it's called a Maisa Uman to solder. So therefore, there is a component in an expensive $200 Keurig machine that can be snapped, that can be cut, and it needs to be resoldered together, which is it's harmless almost. You're not going to cause any damage to the machine. You got to know what you're doing. And the average person is not equipped, is not an Uman. So therefore, you go bring it to a person, you bring it to an Uman, and he does this. He cuts it. Now it's no longer functional, and then he resolders it, and now it has been crafted by a Jew. So he presented this to many Paiskin, and many Paiskin were very excited. I have David Cohn here, the other of them he presented this to a lot of Paiskin, and they signed on to it. They said, this is a valid thing. Then someone came along and said, no, this is not a solution. Because if you know what you're doing, you don't need to resolder it. You just take the wire and you just put it. You just have to position the wire in the correct way and it'll work. It might not work for 25 cups. It'll work. And then you'll be able to know. So they claim, the argument, those who are very upset with this leniency, was that you can get it to work without being an Uman. You can teach a child how to go, whatever. You can teach someone, an average person, what to do to get it to work, even without resoldering these two little pieces. It's no big gedula. So they said to him, the whole big give and take, how long will it last without resoldering it? A couple of cups. So I don't know how they made this determination. The determination was, can it last 10 cups? Can you use your $200 Keurig machine, that you pay top dollar, fancy, high-end model, for 10 cups without the need to have it being resoldered by a professional? So they did an experiment. And they discovered that it can go way beyond 10 cups before it malfunctions. So therefore they...
blows up.
No, it's not going to blow up. There's no harm. They claim this is very, very simple. There's no sakana here. They claim they can go way beyond 10 cups. So then they said that it's not a Maisa Uman to fix. If it can go more than 10 cups without being resoldered, so by cutting it, now resoldering it, that does not constitute that it's been reconstituted by a Jew, because we don't need him to do anything. We can have it function good enough for 10 cups in halacha. I don't know how that number came about. Is good enough that it's already functional the way it was before. You damaged it by cutting these components. You did not yet resolder it, but it works. It works at least for 10 cups before it'll malfunction. You have to reconfigure, realign the wires again. So therefore, now that you went to the chumrah of having it resoldered, big deal. That's not significant. So you've accomplished nothing. So therefore, basically, back to square one. No solution.
There is a solution.
No solution.
Very simple solution.
Yeah.
You have a manufacturer who makes Keurigs, or he makes hot pots, but he doesn't make the cord.
Does not make the what?
It doesn't make the cord that connects it to the wall.
But
so you don't have a complete.
You need to do a Maisa Uman by a Jew. You leave
so
out a Maisa.
Okay. You're ordering the cords. And you come
you need the last part of the Maisa. So this is where it stands. Okay, so Rabbi, the bottom line is Ruba de Ruba, electrical devices, by the way it stands is, and more so today, more than ever, is there's no solution. There's no tefillah. There's no tefillah.